Let's bow our heads and spend a moment in prayer, and then I will begin my sermon. Dear God, I thank you that your presence is already here. We don't need to ask for it because it's already here. It's among us. It's in us. And so, God, I pray that your Holy Spirit will supply where my words lack. I feel like the things that I'm talking about today, just speaking of your glory and your holiness, that words fall so short of just describing who you are. So I pray that you will give clarity in my language as I attempt to communicate. I pray this all in your name. Amen. I love birthdays. They are such a fun time. I love a good party. And I've always loved birthdays ever since I was a little girl. And I don't remember my first birthday because I was one. Does anyone actually remember their first birthday? Raise your hand if you remember your first birthday. No one. Maybe Haven remembers her first birthday because she's pretty close to it. But the rest of us, I don't really remember it. And so the only way I actually know the story is from pictures that have been, you know, in our scrapbook or stories that my mom has told me since, or my parents have told me since then. But I remember my first birthday. My birthday is July 28th, in case y'all are wondering. And July 28th is a really interesting kind of time of year to have your birthday because it can either be overcast like it is today in Washington. July 28th, I've had rainy birthdays before. Or it could be all of summer has finally, they were storing all their heat and it's finally released on July 28th. And it gets to be 90 degrees in Washington, which is where I'm from. And you're thinking to yourself, why is it 90 degrees today? It's too hot for me. I want to spend my entire day inside air conditioning. There's a reason we live in Washington and not Arizona. That's how I feel about heat. Me, the max is like 80 degrees. And then I'm like, all right, we're good. We can just keep going down from there. But anyways, my first birthday, from what I understand, I was there, but I don't remember. It was about 90 degrees. It was super hot. And my whole family had a birthday party outside my house underneath some shade. My whole family, I think I've mentioned this, my whole family is from Auburn. And so actually, I never really had a friend birthday growing up, like most kids do. But my birthdays were just full of my family. So my grandparents on both sides and my aunts and uncles and cousins, all of them were there. They were the party. Seriously, if you want a good party, come hang out with my family and we will show you how to have the best party ever. And so we had an ice cream cake from Baskin Robbins as tradition, and it was Winnie the Pooh themed birthday party. And I remember it was time to open up presents, and obviously, as a one-year-old kid, you don't know how to open up presents, so my older cousins would help me open up my presents and everything, and there was this one present that was yet to be opened, and it was kind of a bigger box, maybe about this big or something, and I really was not that interested in opening up that present. I just wanted to sit on top of that present. And so I just sat on it. And my family was like, oh, Emmy, that's what they call me. They're like, oh, you should open up the present. Let us help you open it. And me being stubborn, I've always been stubborn. Now I want to sit on it. I just want to sit on this present. And so, you know, I was sitting on it. And then eventually, you know, they helped me open the present. They got me off the box and everything. Just lifted me up and helped me open it. And inside this present was a beautiful fire truck. And it was this kind of fire truck that you could sit on it. And my chubby little legs would push the fire. The fire truck around, and it was so fun. And I had that fire truck for years. In fact, I used it up until last year. Just kidding, I didn't do that. I'm a child at heart, but not like that. I probably had it for about 5 or 6 years. I got some good use out of that fire truck, and it was a super fun time. Passed it down to my sister, and we enjoyed it so much. Something I was thinking about. I was thinking about that story, and I was just kind of wondering, like, I mean, for the sake of illustrations, right? Because illustrations only go so far. You guys should know, you've listened to many sermons probably in your life. But I was just thinking about it in the sense that, you know, what would have happened if I didn't open up that box? If I was just content with sitting on the box. I was like, this is the best the box can do. I can't do anything more with this. I'm just going to sit on top of this box, and that's all I do with it. I would have missed out on years of playing with an incredible fire truck. And in fact, just sitting on a box is pretty useless, and I would have got tired of it and probably thrown away that box in a matter of a week, because boxes get tired and worn out easily. But because I opened the box and received the full benefits of what was inside the box, I had a childhood fun of fun and laughter. You know, and I can't help but think about kind of that similar concept with how we connect with God. And sometimes I wonder if how we communicate to God and try to hear from God, if sometimes we think the best our prayer life can be is simply a monologue to God. Sometimes I think that when we pray, when I pray to God, sometimes the best I think I can do when it comes to talking with God are simply a string of requests. And then I don't actually hear from God and don't get a direction from God. I'm like, well, maybe that's just normal. Maybe I just don't get an impression from God. Maybe I don't actually hear God. And especially, I think, in uncharted territories, we're in this series called Uncharted, or in seasons where life seems to be unknown, it's easy to get tired of that uncomfortable season and not actually take time to hear the voice of God. And we sometimes think that's the best that we can do. But I'm here to tell you today that God can give you more than that. God can give you direction in your life. You can hear the voice of God in your life. He's given you that ability. And we're going to unpack that a little bit. But before we go forward, I want to talk about, first off, when I talk about hearing the voice of God, I, for one, have never actually heard the audible voice of God. I don't know if you guys have heard the audible voice of God, like his voice actually speaking to you like how I'm speaking to you. And if so, you're blessed and highly favored, and I wish I could have a little bit of that blessing in my life. But for me, when I hear the voice of God, I'm talking more about an impression that I might have. I'll be praying about something, maybe a moment of stillness, and then I have this strong impression or this gut feeling that I need to do something, or this is the direction that God's giving me, or I'll have peace about something, and God communicates to me through that peace. Or maybe it's through a passage in the Bible, this familiar passage that I've known my entire life, all of a sudden comes to me, and God's speaking to me through this passage. I'm like, oh my goodness, I didn't realize this, God. This is you speaking to me. Or maybe God speaks to me through another person. You know, somebody coming up alongside me and encouraging me, speaking something over me, saying, hey, I just felt impressed that I need to share this with you today. And that could be God speaking to you through another person. Did you know that God can speak to you through worship? That's one of the important reasons why we worship here as a church, or why churches have a worship service. Sometimes if we think we forget about it, because I think sometimes we can approach a worship service as a means of entertainment, and just simply coming here and singing. But did you know that God can actually speak to you through the songs that are being sung up here? And I would even be so bold as the people that sing up front sing over you and maybe even prophesy over your life through what is being sung up front. And that the songs that are being sung have the power to transform you, and God can supply something in your life in that moment. And you know what? Throughout the prayer week, throughout my week, sometimes I don't have the prayers to say to God, and so I'll just write out praise songs to him, or write out familiar hymns, and that is me speaking to God and God speaking to me. And so we come to worship not to be entertained by what's happening up front, but we come here with the hopeful expectation that we are coming into the presence of God, and God is going to speak to me through the things that are being sung up front. That is the power of worship. God can speak to you in that moment. So today we're going to be talking about the voice of God and how we can navigate hearing the voice of God in uncharted territories. And for that, we are going to dive into Exodus chapter 33. So open up your Bibles to Exodus chapter 33. We also have it up here. I also think that this is one of a really cool passage. And I've honestly always loved this passage ever since I was a little girl. And if you have time or remember the sermon throughout this week, which if you don't, that's totally fine. No harm, no foul. but if you somehow remember this passage, I encourage you guys to dive into this passage this week and kind of dig into it yourself, because I think there's some really cool things in here, and I'm barely scratching the surface of it. But I don't want to be long-winded like Pastor Greg or George, so I'll keep it short. I'm just kidding. They're not long-winded. They preach great sermons. We have awesome pastors here. I love them so much. Anyways, Exodus chapter 33, verse 12 through 23. Says this: one day Moses said to the Lord, you have been telling me, take these people up to the promised land, but you haven't told me whom you will send with me. You've told me I know you by name, and I look favorably upon you. If it is true that you look favorably on me, let me know your way so I may understand you more fully and continue to enjoy your favor. And remember that this is your nation. This nation is your very own people. The Lord replied, I will personally go with you, Moses, and I will give you rest. Everything will be fine for you. Then Moses said, if you don't personally go with us, don't make us leave this place. How will anyone know that you look favorably on me and your people if you don't go with us? For your presence among us sets your people and me apart from all the other people on the earth. Not a set of doctrines, not a set of commandments, not a lifestyle. Your presence sets us apart from other people. And the Lord said to Moses, I will indeed do what you have asked, for I look favorably on you and I know you by name. And Moses responded, then show me your glorious presence. What a bold request of Moses. Show me your glorious presence. The Lord replied, I will make all my goodness pass before you. I will call out my name Yahweh before you, for I will show mercy to anyone I choose, and I will show compassion to anyone I choose, but you cannot look directly at my face, for no one can see me and live. The Lord continued, Look, stand near me on this rock. As my glorious presence passes by, I will hide you in the crevice of the rock and cover you with my hand until I have passed by. Then I will remove my hand and let you see me from behind, but my face will not be seen. And then the following chapter describes about how Moses goes up higher into the mountain and Moses is hidden behind the rock and then God walks in front of him. And you can just envision this in your mind about God saying his name, Yahweh the Lord, slow to anger, abounding in compassion and unfailing love. And it's just absolutely powerful. And then Moses has this moment of worship. But how do we get to this point in Exodus chapter 33 where Moses is begging God for his presence to go with them? It almost seems as if God is saying, which is what God is saying, that go ahead to the promised land, but I'm not going with you. How did we get from God calling Moses and the people to the promised land to God now saying, you guys, I'm not going with you any longer? So we're going to have to go do a little backtrack a little bit. We're going back. We're going to cover 30 chapters in the book of Exodus in hopefully less than 3 minutes. So I'm just going to warn you guys ahead of time. It's going to get a little heavy here. We're going to do a quick recap. So hold on tight. We're kind of getting in the trenches a little bit. I'll try to make this as good as possible for you guys to stay engaged. But I think it's so important to kind of go back in order to understand how we got to this point. And that helped me a lot as I was studying this as well. So after, when Greg talked about last week, after, you know, Moses encountered God at the burning bush, and God commissions him to go back to Egypt to set the people free, which if you think about it, is no small feat, right? Like going to Egypt, which is this incredible country, you know, well put together, everything happening there, and to just set the Israelites free, like it's no big deal. Like Egypt is not this big, huge superpower that it is. No, it was a pretty big deal. But Moses does it anyways. God sends 10 plagues to go soften Pharaoh's heart. Pharaoh releases the Israelites to go worship their God. They cross the Red Sea on dry land. They experience hunger and thirst, but then God provides with manna and water from a rock. Pretty, God's an incredible chef. Can we just hand it to God? What can't he do? You know what I mean? He also preserves their clothes from wearing out. It's beautiful. And soon, within a matter of weeks, they find themselves at the foot of Mount Sinai, which is the same place that Moses encountered God in the burning bush. And their God, Yahweh, claims Israel as his own. God descends upon the mountain in the form of a cloud, and the Israelites, in order to even be near the mountain, even up to the fence that was surrounding the mountain, they needed to purify and cleanse themselves for 3 days because of the holiness of God. They couldn't even come close to that mountain without purifying and cleansing themselves prior. It's powerful. And then God creates a covenant with them, which a covenant really is just a relationship. He enters into a mutual agreement of a relationship with these people, claiming them as their own, which is so beautiful about this God choosing them. And then he gives them the Ten Commandments, prefacing them with, I am the Lord your God who rescued you from the land of Egypt, the place of your suffering, or of your slavery. And then he says, you shall have no other gods but me. You must not make yourself an idol. You must not take my name in vain. Remember the Sabbath day. And the list continues. And just a quick side note here that I should mention, we really kind of do ourselves a disservice when we call them the Ten Commandments, because really they should be called the Ten Descriptors. You see, this little note here, in the Hebrew, these commandments are not written in the imperative. They're not written as a command. They're written as an imperfect. What these really are, these are descriptions of what it would be like if God was Lord of your life. And so what we should really read the Ten Commandments as, I am the Lord your God who rescued you from the land of Egypt, the place of your slavery. Therefore, you will not have any other gods. You will not make an idol of any graven image. You will not take my name in vain. All of those different things, because they're not, it's not God saying, you know, you shall not do these things, but it's showing of what happens when we make God Lord of our life. When you make Jesus, when you make God at the center of your life, that is the natural overflow of what happens when you make God Lord over your life. It is pretty powerful. Anyway, so God gives them more instructions, 613 to be exact. God's pretty long-winded. and all of Israel, they hear all those things they're like, and they say, they sign the terms and agreement. They actually read the terms and agreement, unlike the rest of us. I never actually read the terms and agreement when I sign up for new things. I remember I actually tried to read the terms of agreement for, like, when I was really little. My mom was like, oh, just scroll through. You don't need to read that, honey. And so I've never read them since. Anyways, they respond. God gives them instructions. Israel responds. They say, we will do everything the Lord has commanded. We will obey. And they enter into a covenant. God and the elders, they share a covenant meal together, signifying this union between God and his chosen people. And then in Exodus chapter 24, we read that Moses then climbed up the mountain and the cloud covered it. And the glory of the Lord settled down on Mount Sinai and the cloud covered it for 6 days. On the seventh day, the Lord called to Moses from inside the cloud. To the Israelites at the foot of the mountain, the glory of the Lord appeared at the summit like a consuming fire, maybe similarly like the consuming fire at the burning bush. And then Moses disappeared into the cloud as he climbed higher up the mountain. He remained on the mountain 40 days and 40 nights. And so Moses is on top of this mountain, and he gives Aaron, he places Aaron in charge, his brother, over all of the Israelites, because someone needs to babysit all these crazy people, right? And since Moses is up on the mountain for 40 days receiving further instruction from God, there needs to be somebody in charge of the Israelites, all right? If any of you guys have been camp counselor at camp, you know you can't leave your cabin unattended for 1 minute or else they're going to go cray-cray. the Israelites are like a cabin at a camp, Big Lake or Sunset Lake. That is what's happening here. And so the Bible picks up in Exodus chapter 32, where he's up there for 40 days, a little over a month. And so the people began to see how long it was taking Moses to be at this mountain. So they gather around Aaron and they say, come on, make us some gods who can lead us. We don't know what has happened to this fellow Moses who brought us from here from the land of Egypt. And Aaron, who is easily influenced, agrees and tells them to give them their gold so that he can make a calf. So he takes all the gold from the Israelites and he melts it in a fire and he forms a calf out of that gold. And the Israelites see that calf and they say, oh, Israel, these are your gods who brought you out of the land of Egypt. And then they make plans the next day to have a festival honoring that idol, that calf. Now, something that's important to note about what's happening here, which I've never realized before, is that these people weren't worshiping another god. You see, I know the story. I've grown up hearing the story, reading it, hearing it from up front, and for the longest time, I thought that they were worshiping just a random god, that they just made a god for themselves, or that this was actually another god from Egypt. But that's not what's happening here. Rather, they got tired of waiting for God, a God they couldn't see, or every time they got close to this God, the glory of God was too overpowering for them. So they created an image of God. They created an image of Yahweh and began to worship that image of God. And in fact, the festival that they were about to celebrate was similar to the covenant festival that God had with them just chapters before. So it's not like they were trying to create another God and truly rebel against God in a way, even though that's what's happening, but rather they were trying to create an idol out of Yahweh, And then they enter into covenant with that visible image of what they think looks is Yahweh. So God sees what's happening from the mountain. Him and Moses are having this heart to heart, and God sees what's happening. He's like, oh, Moses, you won't believe what's happening down there. I'm so angry at what's happening. They just broke the covenant. They said that they would not make an idol, but they just did. And God starts to get frustrated because these people have been complaining for so long. And he gets angry and he says, I'm just going to get rid of them. And Moses, I'm going to make a nation out of you. I'm just going to start over and I'm just going to make you into a nation. But Moses intercedes for Israel. He reminds God of his character, and then God changes his mind. And so then Moses goes down the mountain to go take care of what was happening while holding the terms of the covenant written in stone. And he sees what's happening. He hears the cries happening, you know, people worshiping this idol. And then he goes down, he sees people bowing down to this idol. And then he's in fury. He's angry. He's upset. And he breaks the stone covenant. And he doesn't do this out of anger. He does do it out of anger, but what I'm trying to say is he doesn't break it on accident or because of a temper tantrum. He broke it because they broke the covenant with God. And he's also upset because, for a lot of reasons, but I realized this week, I think one of the reasons why he was upset is because he had just spent 40 days in the presence of God. While he might not have seen God's face, his literal face, he saw God. He saw God what was like. He was in direct dialogue with God. And so then to come down and see this calf that is supposed to represent God, he would be infuriated. He'd be like, that is nowhere near to what God is like, nowhere near to what he looks like, nowhere near the beauty and the majesty that our God we serve. And so he's infuriated. So he burns the idol, and then he forces the Israelites to drink the ashes of the idol mixed with water. Y'all think that it was bad when you said something naughty when you were little and your parents made you wash your mouth out with soap or something? Nothing compared to idol ash, all right? I'm just going to be up front. Nothing compared to idol ash. And then he tells the Israelites, you know, you committed a great sin, but I'm going to go up to God and ask for forgiveness. And one day, as Moses is talking with God about everything that had just been happening, we find this in verse 12 in chapter 33, where Moses says to God, you have been telling me, take these people up to the promised land, but you haven't told me who you will send with me. You've told me I know you by name and I look favorably on you. But if it is true that you look favorably on me, let me know your way so I may understand you more fully. And remember that this nation is your very own people. And God responds by saying, I will go with you, Moses. And this is in the singular. Everything will be fine for you, Moses. But Moses doesn't want God's presence to just go with him. He wants God's presence to go with them as a whole, with all of Israel. You see, because God was to the point where he was so frustrated with what was happening that he said, you know what, Israelites, you go to the promised land. You go to the promised land, but I'm not going with you. Because I am so frustrated, I can't take it anymore. But Moses, because of his relationship to God, because of his connection to God, Moses was to the point that he would have rather remained in the desert, in the wilderness, in this unknown territory, but with the presence of God, than to be in the promised land, flowing with milk and honey, without the presence of God. He wasn't out here trying to follow a specific path. He was trying to follow the presence of God. And those are very important distinctions. For Moses, it was less about being in the promised land and more about being in the presence of God. And the same should be for me. The same should be for us here. I would much rather be in a season of uncharted territory, but I am daily relying on God, than to be in a season where everything is quote unquote normal or back to normal, but I am not seeking and I'm not relying on the presence of God. So from the story, we see two reactions to being in uncharted territory. One is the reaction of the Israelites, and the other is the reaction of Moses. So the Israelites were uprooted from what was normal to them and taken to a desert where they were nomads, and they had no roadmap except for daily following the pillar of cloud by day and the pillar of fire by night. They had no idea what was happening, but they had to rely on God each and every day. And even though they were in slavery in Egypt, that was their normal. That's what they knew. That's what they were comfortable in. And so that's why even up to the point where of 40 years of wandering in the wilderness, they're still complaining. They're like, why can't we just go back to Egypt? Because Egypt was all they knew. They had no idea that God might actually have something better in store for them. And so this whole thing of God choosing them, of following a leader in the wilderness, this was completely foreign to them. They had no idea what was happening. And so you bet that when their leader, which they probably didn't really know Moses that well or have that kind of relationship with him, when their leader went up to the mountain to seek this God that had claimed them, didn't come down for a month, they probably assumed the worst. They're like, this guy's been up here for 40 days. What happened? Did he die? Did God take him? What's happening? Did he just leave us? Did he ditch us? What's happening? And so they made an image out of God. They didn't hear anything for 40 days. They didn't know what was happening. They didn't know if it was going to be 40 days, 40 weeks, a year, over a year. They didn't know how long he was going to be up there. And so they did have a perfectly normal reaction. They made an image of that God, Yahweh, and they began to worship it. They made an idol out of God. And this is something that we do all the time. Nahum Ward Lev writes in this book called The Liberating Path. He says this: the crucial role of listening to God is the biblical opposition to idolatry. The fundamental fault of idolatry is that idolatry is essentially a human monologue. Idols don't speak, and humans don't listen. So have you made an idol out of God? How easy it is in uncharted territory to make an idol out of God. For our relationship to him to essentially be a human monologue, where we don't take time to hear God's voice, we don't take time to listen to him in case he might speak. Maybe it's because we don't like what he might say to us. Or maybe because in uncharted territory, we get into panic mode and we react because we think we know best. We don't actually have the time to slow down and hear the voice of God. The temptation is to rush ahead of him in that time, to just assume that we know what he wants us to do, and to try to fill the empty space with an answer from him. We are not used to taking the time to hear God's voice because it's uncomfortable. We apply this in all different areas of life, major job decisions, trying to make a career change. When we do this with relationships, you know, should we not get in that relationship, going to college. It seems like all these different things, we rush to make these different decisions without actually taking time to hear what might God's will actually be. Maybe there's fear of the unknown. You know, I think also the future of church. You know, we've just come out of an interesting season here in 2020, and a natural reaction is to try to go back to what was once comfortable, what was once known, instead of actually thinking, what's God's will? God, where are you moving? What do you actually want us to do? How do you want us to communicate? But then a lot of times when it comes to these different decisions on our day-to-day life, we make an idol out of God and just simply talking to God, talking about God, explaining the actions of God, but we don't actually know what God's trying to say to us. And in that moment, we've made an idol out of God. The second reaction is Moses' reaction. It's such a beautiful way that he communicates to God. Moses and God just had this incredible friendship. And Moses reacted to being in uncharted territory, and his reaction was to seek the presence of God. He had this refusal to get off the mountain unless God went with him. He actually asked to seek the glory of God, which was a big improvement from his first interaction with God in Exodus 3, where God simply just said his name and Moses just hid himself in absolute fear. Now he asks to see his glory. Just such a beautiful, bold request because he has a relationship with God. And this dialogue almost an argument that he has with God, shows that God and Moses had a relationship, which I just want to say that having an argument with God is a relationship. People in relationships, you argue all the time, and so it's perfectly normal to argue with God. If you don't like what God's doing in your life, tell him that. Like, God, I really don't like what you're doing right now. You're really frustrating me. I really don't like this. I have arguments with God all the time. Where I'm frustrated with him, and we go and we contend and we wrestle, and I try to understand, and I make him to try to understand what I'm going through too, you know what I mean? But what I'm here to say is that that is a relationship. That is a dialogue that is engaging. God wants that. Why? Because God has made you a co-ruler with him. God doesn't desire just blind devotion. He desires a relationship. You have responsibility. Moses changed God's mind. Moses interceded. You, hear me out, this is crazy, but from what we read in the Bible, you actually have the power to change God's mind. By wrestling with him, God has the power to change your mind as well. We don't like that as much, right? But he does. And that happens through wrestling, through engaging with him in that type of dialogue. It's powerful. Where am I? Over here. Sorry. God desires relationship over blind devotion. So what if in uncharted territories we had the same reaction as Moses? Even if God said something that we don't like, we still engage with him in a dialogue. That we seek the presence of God to truly engage with him and have this quiet resolve that we will not move forward unless his presence goes with us. Every single day, to have that quiet resolve of, I will not leave here, God, unless I know your presence is with me. David G. Benner writes in The Gift of Being Yourself, which is a powerful, powerful book. I'm reading it right now, and I recommend it to everybody. He says this, relationships develop when people spend time together, right? Spending time with God ought to be the essence of prayer. However, as it is usually practiced, prayer is more like a series of email or instant messages than actually hanging out together. Oftentimes, it involves more talking than listening, and it should not surprise that the result is a superficial relationship. I was studying and reading all of this on Thursday, and I just had this kind of overwhelming emotion come over me, just because, honestly, reading this passage always gets me really emotional, because I was just thinking about how God would speak to Moses plainly. I mean, the book of Numbers talks about, I think Numbers 12 or something, where God is speaking about Moses, and he says, I speak to Moses face to face. In other words, I speak to him plainly. I don't speak to him in visions. I don't speak to him in prophecy or parables. I speak to him plainly. He had that relationship with Moses, and Moses was in the tangible presence of God, in the pillar of clouds, which to the outside looked just like this consuming fire to people looking in. And I had this moment where I could almost see it. I felt like I could see God, and it was just so powerful. And after that, I drove to my friend Justin Lindsay Canfield's house, and on my way there, I saw this beautiful gray-blue cloud. And in that gray-blue cloud, I could see rays coming from that cloud. And it was like I was looking into the presence of God. And at that moment, I just start crying, and I'm just like, God, I just want to see you. I want to actually see you. I want to see your face. I want to have what Moses had, to just be in your glory, to behold it, to see it, to have my face and life glow, just like Moses did from when he was in a relationship with you. And I just had this longing where it's like, I'm just ready for heaven. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just ready to be in heaven. And you know what? I'll be honest, there have been moments in my life, you know, where I'm like, you know, God, you know, don't come soon because I want to get married before you come to heaven, or before I go to heaven, or I want these different things to happen. But at this point, I'm just like, you know what, God, just come. Just come, because I just want to see you. But then Friday evening, when I was back in my office, I had this verse come to mind. Galatians 2:20, where it says, I have been crucified with Christ, and it's no longer I who live, but God lives in me. And so the life I live by faith in the one who loves me and gave himself up for me. And so what that verse tells me is that I can actually have what Moses had. And it blows my mind, guys, especially after reading this passage, but maybe I can have it even better than what Moses had, because I can not only see his glory, his holiness, but now his glory and his holiness lives in me. In my rebellion, I don't have to be this big prophet leader that, you know, was chosen or whatever, but his holiness, his glory can live inside of me. That same holiness and that same glory that the Israelites had to purify themselves before they went even to the mountain, just so they could even somehow be near that. Now God says that God lives in me, period. In my rebellion, in everything, not when I have it all figured together, but God lives in me now. And so I can walk into uncharted territory with the truth that the presence of God not only goes before me, but is in me. And so I seek God, not so I can obtain the presence of God, but so that God will awaken within me an awareness of his already present glory within me. So this past year was uncharted. The year ahead is uncharted. Life in general is uncharted, right? No one's lived your life. You're it, you know, there's no second chance. This is your life, right? God has given you the roadmap for your life, essentially. And so there's lots of questions, you know, do you take this job promotion? Do you take this move? Do you date this person? How many kids should you have? What should you eat for breakfast? Just kidding, that's a little less of a big life decision. Although for me, breakfast is a really important meal of the day. So for me, it's a pretty big decision. but there are lots of like big decisions, and especially after this year, I think the way that we've kind of done life and the way that we've operated, there's just so many different unknowns, and it's hard to know, like, do you take a risk in this, or what should we do? And life in this church is uncharted. How do we move forward as a church during this pandemic? I have no idea. That's why we're praying. We're asking God. We're seeking him. What direction is he trying to take us as a church community? And are we willing to listen? Are we willing to listen to what he has to say? Are we actually willing to surrender our will to his? All to Jesus I surrender. It sounds really nice when we sing it, but actually living it out, are we willing to do that? Are we actually willing to surrender all to Jesus? Or is that just a nice song that we sing? Each moment of every day is uncharted. And so do we seek God as our God, or just kind of move forward ahead? And my prayer is that we would incorporate moments in our day just to listen. And it's hard. And to be honest with you, I have a really hard time doing this. And I feel like there's moments in my life, seasons in my life, where I will be listening to the voice of God, and other moments in life where life picks up and I don't actually take time, because it's more convenient to not sit, be still and try to hear the voice of God. It's more convenient if I just go about life my way, if I go ahead of God and not actually seek the presence of God. And I find it really hard, especially if you're like with my personality, to actually just be still and be quiet and actually kind of hear what God might have to say. Perhaps to hear the voice of God means going on a walk. Remember in college, sometimes and I'd have super stressful days, or even days where I was like, yeah, I have an afternoon, I'd go on a walk. And I'd go on a walk with God, not simply to just exercise, but actually for the purpose of going on a walk with God. So this might sound weird, but you should try it out. And so I would go on a walk in a neighborhood, and I would imagine that God's standing next to me, either side, and I would talk to him. And sometimes I would talk out loud, sometimes I would talk in my head, but I would just talk to him, and then I would walk in silence and just think, I wonder what God's going to say. Sometimes I would feel an impression, sometimes I would feel a moment of peace. Sometimes I'd feel clarity, sometimes I wouldn't hear anything. And that was okay, because I was just walking with God, and like I would walk with a friend. Sometimes another way to hear the voice of God is engaging with a Bible story, specifically a gospel story, inserting yourself in the character of one person. So maybe you're the woman that touches Jesus' hem, or maybe you're the blind man asking Jesus to heal you. And imagine what it would be like to be in that person's shoes as you're interacting with Jesus. And I think this is an incredible thing to do, because if you think about your friends, the closest friends are the ones that have so many shared experiences with each other. I think of my camp friends. And I could talk to those people for hours, and we were so bonded because of all the shared experiences that we have. And so the power of entering your life into a gospel story is that you're sharing an experience with Jesus. And that's how you bond a relationship, is shared experiences. And so enter into a gospel story and imagine you're going through that with Jesus. And it's pretty powerful. Or maybe just taking time, 10 minutes, just to be still and meditate on a Bible or think about a Bible verse and think about what that might mean. And just be quiet and think about that. And it's really hard to do it at first because we're talkers. Because we talk to God, we have monologues, we have devotional books, we have all these different things, and we're just so busy talking to God, reading, filling our life with so many different things, all of this different, with everything, that actually hearing the voice of God is really hard at first. And so I just want to say that if you've fallen out of season with that, or this is the first time you're trying it, and the first time you actually try to hear the voice of God, you don't hear it, please don't be discouraged. Don't give up. Keep trying. Dallas Willard says this: the first most basic thing we must do is keep God before our minds. This is the fundamental secret for caring for our souls. Our part in practicing the presence of God is to direct our minds constantly to Him. In the early part of practicing, we may well be challenged by our burdensome habits of dwelling on things less than God. But these are habits, not the law of gravity, and can be broken. You can have what Moses had. You don't have to approach God like how the Israelites approached God and in that idol form. You can approach God in that relationship that Moses had, because we have it better than Moses. We have the presence of God in us. We have Him as our guide. We, as Paul says, I believe in Corinthians, we have the mind of Christ. So my prayer is that we would leave this place asking God to create an awareness within us about the presence of God, and that we too would have the quiet resolve that we would not move forward unless we know the presence of God is going before us. Let's bow our heads. God, I thank You for the life of Moses, for the inspiration that he is, and for lessons that we can continue to learn from the Bible. It's such a gift to us. God, I would much rather be in an uncharted territory, but with Your presence, than to be back to normal, but without it. God, show me how to rely on You every day, how to follow You, how to follow Your pillar of cloud by day and Your pillar of fire by night. I never want to lose that sense of reliance on You, even as things kind of shift back to normal as a society and as a church. Spirit, lead us where our trust is without borders. Stretch us, God, so that we can fully embrace all that You have to offer us in Your life. I thank You for each person, each family that's represented here in this room. I pray that Your Holy Spirit will just fill their lives, that they will come to understand the reality that Your presence is within each and every one of us, and that we can have what Moses had in an even more incredible way because of the new covenant that we have with You because of the cross. We're so grateful for that. Thank You for the Sabbath, the gift that it is to us, and I pray for safety and a blessing upon each person here. Pray this in Your name. Amen.